Good morning. I'm going to talk a little bit about the Heidrick School's history. I'm going to go from the beginning all the way up to the present in 10 minutes, so I'm going to go very quickly, or 12 minutes. In the late 1800s and early 1900s, the Bureau of Soils mapped soils in relation to their potential for agriculture. And the way they considered wet soils, or they generally mapped them as unfit for agriculture unless drained. And then they went on to say these wet soils were thought of as highly fertile, valuable agricultural ground if reclaimed. So the early management of hydric soils and wetlands in agriculture was to reclaim them. And that was essentially draining them by putting in tile drainage, by putting in ditches, any way to get water off the ground. And then you had these highly fertile, rich soils, high in organic matter that they can grow crops on. So we spent many of our efforts in the early 1900s reclaiming our wetlands and hydric soils. In the 1930s, there was a realization that the cost of draining exceeded the benefits when it came to these very wet soils. You could drain them in drier years when you didn't have a whole lot of standing water. You could farm them, you could get a good crop off of them. But many times that crop, you spent the money to put the crop in, you spent the money to dig the ditches, put in the tile drainage, and then that crop would get flooded out. And they started coming to the realization that the costs involved in draining these wetlands exceeded the benefits that they were getting out of cropping these wetlands. It wasn't until later, in the 1970s, that the Fish and Wildlife Service started looking at wetlands as being very important to wildlife and to the life cycle of wildlife. And in the 1970s, the Fish and Wildlife Service started inventorying the wetlands throughout the country in their National Wetland Inventory. And they asked SCS at the time, the soil survey, to help them with the soils effort, to help them identify the hydric soils that would help them pinpoint where our wetlands are for their National Wetland Inventory. At the same time, Soil Survey was developing our latest soil taxonomy, and we started incorporating wet soils into our classification system. So the first sort of method that we used to identify hydric soils was through soil classification. In development of the National Wetland Inventory, NRCS Soil Survey Divisions, or SCS Soil Survey Division, started developing these hydric soils lists, and that was based on the soil classification. And that's how we identified hydric soils at that point in time. In the 1980s, through the Food Security Act and the Clean Water Act, there were clear definitions of hydric soils and soils that are involved in wetlands developed. And there was a three-parameter approach set up to identify wetlands, and one of those three parameters was hydric soils. When the Food Security Act came out in 1985, it primarily used the hydric soils list to identify soils, but also recommended using field indicators out in the field to identify them. Same thing with the Clean Water Act. The 87 manual came out, and at that point in time, once again, we only had the hydric soils list as a very good indicator of hydric soils, but field indicators were developed based mostly on anecdotal information on how to identify hydric soils out in the field. We hadn't done a whole lot of research on hydric soils at that time. Most of SES's efforts was on agricultural land. They've decided that hydric soils, it was not cost effective to drain these soils to farm them, so we didn't do a whole lot of research on hydric soils at that point in time. However, most of the field indicators that were developed through the 87 manual were pretty good, considering they were anecdotal. Also, at that time, the Food Security Act called for this National Technical Committee for Hydric Soils to be developed to consult, for NRCS to consult in helping to identify hydric soils. At this point in time, too, with the advent of the Fish and Wildlife Service, understanding of how wetlands relate to wildlife, we started, instead of draining wetlands, restoring them. And we've started understanding that you can grow crops and have wetlands all in the same ecosystem, and it was very beneficial. So this is where we started our wetland restoration push in the 80s and on into the 90s and the present. Like I said, the Food Security Act, SES used the hydric soils list mainly to identify hydric soils out in the field because that's the best information we had at the time to identify hydric soils. And it also mentioned the use of field indicators, which we didn't really have at the time. And it also required SES to consult with the National Technical Committee for Hydric Soils on all issues related to hydric soils list and the field indicators. The function of the National Technical Committee for Hydric Soils was to provide technical leadership in the formulation, evaluation, and application of the hydric soils definition, list, indicators, technical standard, and the glossary for hydric soils. It updates and distributes a national list of hydric soils every year. It refines and maintains field indicators of hydric soils in the United States. So once the National Technical Committee was developed, we started this push to develop better field indicators for identifying hydric soils. And they communicate and respond to public comment regarding suggested changes to hydric soils definition list, indicators, tech notes, and technical standard. They aren't responsible for the development of these indicators. They're just responsible for providing the information to the public. And to determine soil hydrologic and climatic data necessary to more accurately define and determine hydric soils. This is a list of the current members of the National Technical Committee for Hydric Soils, but you'll see in the back there's actually a more historic picture of people that have been on the National Technical Committee for Hydric Soils. You'll see Carl Hippo, who's currently retired, NRCS, Russ Pringle, also retired, Wade Hurt, retired NRCS, although he does still participate as a university representative because he's now working for the University of Florida. Herb Huddleston was also one of the founding members of the National Technical Committee for Hydric Soils, as well as Jimmy Richardson, who's now retired, but was a founding member. The National Technical Committee is made up of NRCS representation, as well as representation from all the federal agencies that are involved with hydric soils issues. And then we have university representation. And because most of the federal agency representation tend to be pedologists, most of the university people tend to be specialists outside of the pedology field. So we have soil microbiologists, soil chemists, some hydrologists, and other people that provide expertise that we just don't have in our federal agencies. The history of the indicators, the first field indicators established for hydric soils were published in the Corps of Engineers 87 manual. And these were the anecdotal indicators. We really didn't have a whole lot of hard data on how to identify hydric soils in the field other than the way we identified soils with aquic conditions for soil taxonomy. The problem with these anecdotal indicators is while they were pretty good and tended to identify a lot of our hydric soils, there were some times when these indicators identified soils that were not hydric. And those are the two pictures over to the left. You've got a nice gray E-horizon in a spot of soil, very dry, droughty soil. But if you didn't know anything about soils and you just used the indicators, this would be identified as a hydric soil. The one in the middle is a glauconitic soil. Glauconite is just a mineral that tends to have colors similar to hydric soils. Once again, this is a high dry soil that using these 87 manual indicators, you'd identify as hydric. And then we also had many soils that were hydric soils that just were not identified by these indicators. And in these cases, once again, you'd have to fall back on taxonomy. And the problem using taxonomy is it's an interpretation that tended to range in and out of that hydric soils boundary. The National Technical Committee for Hydric Soils was formed in the mid-80s to assist with the development of the field indicators. At that time, too, NRCS funded the Wet Soil Monitoring Project, and this gave money to researchers to collect data out in the field, this hard data that we were lacking on hydric soils, to help better define field indicators. There are also some regional committees that were developed, and if you look at the field indicators of hydric soils, you'll notice that there are a lot more indicators for these specific regions, and that's because of the input from these regional committees. You had a regional committee in Florida, one in New England, and one in the Mid-Atlantic region to better help define how to identify hydric soils out in the field. The 1995 Farm Bill was the first time they formally adopted these new indicators. The Corps of Engineers used the 87 manual based on policy. They use these old indicators. We were in the process of developing these new indicators, and the 1995 Farm Bill formally adopted the use of the field indicators of hydric soils in the United States for use in Farm Bill wetland activities. The way these were developed, there was a subcommittee consisting of soil scientists involved in the wet soil monitoring project that were put together, and that's how they met and developed these indicators. They were the National Technical Committee for Hydric Soils went out and field tested the indicators. They had local people field test the indicators. With all that input, that's how the first indicators were developed, and the first hard copy of the indicators was published in 1996. One of the things that came out of the wet soil monitoring project was you had a whole bunch of researchers out there collecting data, and they were all collecting the data they felt was important to identify hydric soils, and none of that data matched. So in the mid-90s, the National Technical Committee for Hydric Soils developed a technical standard to standardize the way that data was collected. So now when we get data, all that data is the same data, so we can compare the data and better help define hydric soil boundaries and where hydric soils exist on the land. The National Technical Committee meets once a year, so we collect input every year. So the field indicators, list of field indicators changes every year as we collect input from people outside of the committee that have developed new indicators to put on the list to better identify hydric soils. And this is version 7.0. This was published in the spring of 2010. You can download it at this website here, and the hard copies were published just last week, so they're hot off the press. If you don't have a hard copy and you'd like a copy, if you go to the NRCS booth at the displays, there are hard copies there. So this is ever-changing. We are constantly getting new information to develop better indicators to identify those soils that we don't have good indicators right now. Some of the future of hydric soils, iris tubes was a development discovered by a PhD candidate at Purdue University, Byron Jenkinson. He formerly was a plumber, and when he was a plumber, he saw how iron would collect on PVC pipe. And previous to the iris tube development, the only ways we could prove that a hydric soil, which by definition has to be saturated and anaerobic, how we could prove it goes anaerobic is either by collecting the actual data, measuring EH out in the field, and that's very time consuming, or by using alpha-alpha dipyridyl dye, which for some reason everybody's afraid of. I'm not really sure why. Iris tubes, basically what he did was he put an iron paint on a PVC tube, just like he had seen when he was a plumber. He saw the iron collecting on the tube. You stick the tube in the ground, you leave it there for 6 weeks, you can even leave it there longer. Pull the tube out of the ground. If that soil is going anaerobic, that iron paint will be gone. A very simple way of identifying reducing conditions in the soil. Due to the advent of these iris tubes, identifying reducing conditions became a lot more simpler, and this has accelerated the research and the development of new indicators. So we currently, right now, have many projects going on to develop better indicators of hydric soils in the field. Also, new criteria needs to be developed. New criteria needs to be developed for our new database system. We have this criteria that we use in our old database system that sort of has been around forever, and it doesn't work in NASIS. So we need to develop new criteria that actually works in NASIS. And the good news about not having a good query currently in NASIS is the reliance on hydric soils list has diminished because we are developing much better field indicators of hydric soils. And one of the things that I forgot to add on this future of hydric soils is there are a couple efforts going on. There's a SEEP project that NRCS is involved with, a bunch of other agencies looking at ecosystem services of wetlands. So now we're not only trying to identify wetlands out in the field, where are they, but how are they functioning? Also, Soil Survey Division is involved with a project with EPA looking at the condition of our wetlands. EPA is going to go out and assess 1,000 wetlands throughout the whole country, to just assess the condition of the wetlands and how they are functioning in our ecosystem. And Soil Survey Division is cooperating with them to provide all the soils assistance and the lab work for this study. So not only now are we focusing on the identification of where these wetlands are, but we're also focusing on how these wetlands are functioning out in the ecosystem. And that is all I have.